Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Perpetual Chess. My guest this week is Grandmaster, chess streamer, chess educator, civil engineer, Pepe Cuenca. Thank you for coming on, Pepe.
Welcome. Thank you very much for inviting me to your podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to have you. Your streams are fun to watch. You've got so much energy. I think you might be... I mean, there's some lower-rated streamers that show a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm for chess, but amongst the Grandmaster set, I think you've got the... the title for the most charismatic streamer.
Well, I don't know, but yes, we try to make... to promote chess. You know, I think chess is a lot of fun. It has a lot of excitement and adrenaline, so... Why not to show to the people as well like this, yeah?
Exactly. And you were telling me before we started recording that you drink a couple Red Bulls before we get started. So it sounds like you need to line up with Hikaru and get a deal from Red Bull.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, when I finish doing this streaming, I'm extremely exhausted. As you can see, you know, it's like a lot of shouting, a lot of energy, and of course, you get tired.
Yeah, I bet. And I feel like as a chess teacher, I do most of my teaching in real life, like in school classrooms and stuff like that for chess classes. But I feel like I need to step up my game. I need to study you and learn to project more energy and get the kids excited.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Jose, I saw on the internet that you're a civil engineer, but I also know you're quite busy with chess. So why don't we start with talking about, like, what's your day-to-day like? Are you do you have work outside of chess? Or are you focused strictly on your chess business right now?
Well, actually, I was never a professional. So
okay.
So when I was 17 or 18 years old, when I was about to get to university, I got my IM title. So that was the time to choose what to do with my life, yeah? So it was clear that with 18 years old and 2400, I was not going to be the new world champion. So that's why I decided to start my civil engineering degree at the university. And I was always trying to play chess, but also to do properly with my studies, yeah? So, yes, when I finished actually my civil engineering degree at the University of Granada, I got actually different scholarships to do a master's. And one of them was in the United States to do this MBA program with a chess scholarship. But I also got another scholarship here in Europe to do my master's. So I stayed in Europe. And I did my master in mathematical modeling for engineering. And yes, I was also, I mean, at that time, I I barely played any tournament, you know. But then when I finished my master's, I was hired as a researcher at the University of Hamburg in Germany to pursue my PhD in applied mathematics. By accident, one of my best friends, Lawrence Trent, I don't know if you know him.
Oh, yeah. And he's been on the show. I didn't know that you guys were tight. I could see the bond. You guys have similar enthusiasm.
Yeah. So actually, we met in some under-16 world championship, and he was able to speak some Spanish. I was not able to speak English. So. And then he came to my city, to Granada, to do some exchange during his university period. So we became very close friends. And then during my PhD time in Germany, he came to record some videos at some company. Right. Now it's Chess24. And then he told me about this company. I was out of chess, basically. So I was doing my research at the university, doing my PhD. But then he invited me to go there to the company. Then he introduced me to the people over there. And then they offered me to work. So I started to work over there in the evenings after my main job, because I was full-time. I had a full-time position at the University of Hamburg. And yes, that's how I started to work with Chess24. And now I'm every day over there. So
nice. Right place, right time, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and I have a lot of questions on the background. First of all, I'll say, I'm old friends with Jan Gustafsson, Gusti, our mutual friend. And he also, I remember when Chess24 was just in its gestation period, and he was, we had both been poker players, and he was transitioning back to chess and talking about this new company as well. So I know you do a lot of your streaming in Spanish in addition to English, but your English has gotten quite good.
Well, I live 6-7 years out of Spain, so that's how I learn something. So
that'll do it. But you're back in Spain now, right?
Yeah, I'm back in Madrid now.
Okay,
I finished my PhD in December 2016, so it's more than a year now that I'm back into Spain.
Okay, I've only been to Barcelona, but I love your country. I mean, I had an amazing time there, and I really it's at the top of my list of places to explore.
You should visit my city. Yeah, you should visit my city, Granada, in the south.
Yeah. I was checking out some pictures. It looks amazing. It looks picturesque. I'd love to go there, but I got little kids at home, so I either need a higher paying job, or I need to ditch my family if I'm gonna get to all the places I want to do.
Yeah.
But so speaking of travel, I saw on your stream you were recently at a chess tournament in Argentina with a couple of your compatriots. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about what that was like?
Yes, there's a lot of events going on now in South America, and since now this Chess24 Spanish streamings were quite successful, we are getting invited to different tournaments in South America, and we're more than happy to go there. You know, it's the people are extremely friendly, and the weather is nice. So I was living in Germany for 4 years, so I had enough about cloudy days and all this stuff. So yes, we were invited to the Patagon in Argentina to some tournament, and it was very, very nice. And actually, after this tournament, we went to Mexico, to Mérida, to the Carlos Torres Memorial just before Christmas. So it was a very, very nice tournament as well.
Nice. And it was you and Spanish number two, David Anton Guijardo, and there was one more person, right?
Exactly. One more person who is David Martinez. He is actually the Spanish Chess24 director.
Okay. Oh, nice. And when you guys get an invite like that, I'm sure it helps that you're popular in Argentina and, you know, in all Spanish speaking countries. But do you feel like do you think that helps them get people to the tournament? Do you do an event there? What was the idea of them inviting you specifically, or was it an invitational tournament?
Yeah, normally they want us to give some talks and then to do some events like blitz tournaments or, you know, some training camps. So besides the tournament, we normally do this kind of stuff. So it seems to attract some more people. I don't know if this is exactly the truth or not, but this is what they look for, you know?
Okay, did you guys do some events on this trip?
Yes, of course. We actually were in Paraguay, in Asunción, in some academy. and the kids were really excited. So it was a really an amazing time over there. And then in Mexico, we visited some academies as well. And we were in some Blitz events, you know, doing this kind of crazy Blitz commentary in some park in the city with, you know, with a lot of people over there. So it's been really, really nice.
It sounds like fun. And so would you say that the state of chess is pretty healthy in those countries?
Well, I mean, of course, in Europe, you have many, many more tournaments than in Latin America, for example. But then people really appreciate over there when some grandmasters come, for example, some international masters come. So they really appreciate that. They seem to be very happy.
Okay. And what kind? So, and are they typically like beginner level players, or are you working with the more talented players? Like, how do the workshops work, or is it like, you know, all levels?
Well, it depends. Normally, they try to separate. So one day, for example, for under 1,800 people, or other day for just for kids, or other day more talented players, or even FIDE Masters or something like this. So we have been in all kind of events, you know, and we are lucky to have David Martinez. He is actually one of the best coaches in Spain. He coaches David Anton, for example, since 10 years ago or something like this. So, we can work with different levels.
Nice. So what kind of material does David Martinez present? What have you noticed from watching him teach?
Well, normally he teaches his training method, for example, and then we work with kids with what we call the force moves to solve tactical problems, for example. So we start always analyzing checks, captures, and threats, and with this simple method, it turns out that you can solve a lot of chess puzzles, for example. So we do every kind of stuff. We focus on tactics. We also show some games. Then we do some a little bit of a show, like with these commentaries, in order to let the people have some fun. So every kind of stuff.
Nice. And did you work with a trainer coming up as a chess player?
Well, I never had a coach, actually. So, well, whenever I qualified for the Spanish championship under 16 or something, in my region we had some coach that we could use during that week. But I mean, I never had some private coach, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, I was just curious. I mean, I one topic that we talk about a lot on this show is just sort of the different levels of support from federations and governments and stuff in given states. And I know Spain, they don't have anyone at the tippy top right now, but you guys have a pretty deep bench. I was looking at the top 25 FIDE players, and it's, you know, strong country chess-wise.
Yes, actually, in Spain, I would say it's the country with more tournaments, at least in Europe. So in the summer, actually, you can play a tournament every week, basically a strong tournament, valid for FIDE rating. So it's actually quite healthy. And then a lot of masters from Europe come here. Even Indian Federation send a lot of players here. So it's quite healthy. I mean, maybe it doesn't support the top players, but for the base, it's amazing. I mean, it's really healthy.
Yeah, and everyone wants to go to Spain anyway, so to have chess tournaments there is a good excuse.
Yeah. So you can combine chess with tourism, for example.
Yeah, and so our guests have varied levels. Everyone who comes on the show, of course, loves chess, but as chess professionals, some of us have to put our games on the back burner, and some of us are able to stay more active. And I noticed on your FIDE page, you've been pretty busy playing chess. So how's your game coming along?
Well, I managed to get to my peak like 1.5 years ago or something. I managed to get 25-40 or something like this. But then I decreased like 70 points. Now I'm gaining some points back. Now I'm in 2,500 more or less. So I don't know. I feel like it's quite difficult to improve more once I am already 30. Almost 31 years old, and I'm always busy, you know. Besides chess, I do some engineering work all the time, so it's actually, I mean, I don't have much time to train and to study chess, so I feel like my level should be around 2,500, and it's difficult to increase, and it's easier to go down, you know.
yeah, you take take the stairs up and the elevator down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel. I mean, I'm a lot weaker than you, but I feel the same way. It's just it's such heavy sledding to reach a new high. So what do you? So how do you approach your tournaments? Since you're not able to put in a ton of study, do you still get pretty upset if you lose, or are you able to just like play for the enjoyment and not worry too much about the results?
Well, of course, I care about the results as every chess player, I would say, you know. But normally I try to enjoy in chess tournaments. So normally I try to go to places that I enjoy. So it's very difficult to see me playing a tournament in Siberia, in Russia, for example, with minus 40 degrees.
Right.
But, but of course I'm very competitive. That's imagine this is how I managed to get to the Grandmaster, because I'm very competitive. And yes, when I'm in a chess tournament, I try to focus, I try to prepare the games, because in that period is actually when I can improve my chess, when I can study some chess or prepare some good lines, for example.
Okay, so if you do have time to study, what's your priority? Like, how would you say, I mean, like, how would you spend, say, 5 hours a week studying chess at your level?
Well, normally one could think that we spend most of our time studying openings. But in my case, and in, I think in many cases, that's not true. So normally I try to put a difficult position, a tough position in my board, and then try to think, and then to analyze some lines. And then finally, of course, I mean, at the end, I check them with the computer. But first, what we try to do, for example, I have doing some training. I've done some training with Anton and David Martinez in Madrid. In the last month, so what, let's say once every 2 weeks or something. And what we do is we sit at the board, and then David gives us difficult positions. We try to give our opinion, to analyze some deep lines, and then check with the computer.
Okay, so do you talk it over first, like with David, or is it like you guys sit separately, come up with your thoughts, then talk, or do you just right away like bounce ideas off of each other?
Well, we think for a while, and then we start discussing, and then finally we start we discuss with the computer. So first between the two of us, and then with the computer. That means David behind the computer. Eh?
Okay. And what about when you're in a tournament? Like, are you prepping a lot in between rounds, or do you try to relax during what little downtime you have?
Well, I love sports, so besides chess. So normally I try to play some tennis or to play some football with the people over there. And I also like visiting the cities where I am. So I don't want to go to Mexico and just to see the playing hall, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I try to enjoy the different atmospheres, different cities. And yes, basically, since I'm not a professional chess player, because I always did something with my engineering stuff, so I try to enjoy as much as possible in the tournaments.
Good for you. Yeah, it's good to have balance.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you have like a long-term vision in terms of like how much chess work you'll do versus how much engineering work?
Well, I don't have a plan, but now I'm focusing more on chess, but I am also looking for postdoc positions, for example, at some university. And I got some offers from a German institute, for example. I'm thinking about this, and I don't know exactly what to do. This is an uncertain period for me, so I still don't know if I should focus more on chess, this commentary thing, or if I should focus more on my engineering. So let's see what the future brings.
Yeah, it's a tough decision for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did getting a PhD in civil engineering, how did that compare in difficulty to becoming a grandmaster?
Well, I became a grandmaster in 2015, I guess. I finished my PhD in 2016.
Wow.
But just 2 and 1 year ago, because I was a bit stuck on my chess, since I was focusing on my degree and then my master's and then my PhD. But since I started to work with Chess24, of course, preparing all these video series for the people made me study openings. That was one of my clear weaknesses in my game. So that's how I became grandmaster. But I would say, I don't know, in my case, my PhD was very nice, because I had a really nice supervisor. He gave me really nice ideas. It was a very nice atmosphere with all my colleagues. And I don't know, but both things are quite difficult. But also, if you work for them, I mean, you can make it. Yeah?
And you enjoy your work in engineering?
Yes, I do. Yes, I was working in ultrasonic non-destructive testing of materials.
Wow.
So that was pretty nice. So I was working for a German project that was built between some universities and some German company. So that was really nice. I really enjoyed it. But I think I'm in love with chess as well. So basically, I enjoy both fields.
Man, that's pretty impressive. Well, I can barely even say what you said you studied. Say it again one more time.
I mean, my PhD was about ultrasonic non-destructive testing of materials. So basically, there's this German company, and they manufacture these steel tubes, and then these steel tubes can have some small defects, right? And then what we do is we send some ultrasonic waves, and then from the data that you receive from the reflections of these waves, you try to understand what's going on in those tubes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. It sounds better you than me, I would say, to be working on that. So, do you, Pepe? Do you speak any other languages?
Well, I speak Italian.
Okay.
Since I was living in, I was studying in Italy for an exchange during 6 months, and Italian is actually quite similar to Spanish. So I was living with 7 Italian in the same house, and it was quite easy to learn something. And then I speak some German, but life is too short to learn German.
So. Yeah, it's a tough language. It seems like you're pretty well traveled. Do you have a favorite place you've been, whether for chess or just generally?
Well, I would say I love going to Latin America. I love Argentina, for example, or Mexico or Cuba. I have participated 4 times in the Capablanca Memorial. So, yeah, I would say that the Capablanca Memorial is my favorite tournament.
Okay, and is that an invitational or an open?
Well, it's an open. If you are a grandmaster, international master, they can give you some conditions, but everybody can play this tournament.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to go to Cuba. I have not yet made it. I did spend I went on my honeymoon in Argentina, and I definitely share your enthusiasm for it. It's a beautiful country.
Yeah, full of nice people. So
yeah, for sure. So let's talk. So do you do any coaching? Like, I know you do a lot of streaming for Chess24, and you've done some workshops and camps and stuff like that. But do you do any like one-on-one instruction?
Yes, I have done this a lot. So not now. I mean, now I've been extremely busy, so I quit doing this coaching. But I had my students like since 3 years ago. I'm not doing any more coaching, but I used to have a lot of students, Spanish talented players, or even some British and German. But now, between the commentary and playing, I mean, what I enjoy more is playing still. So whenever I have some free time, I prefer going to tournaments rather than doing some coaching.
Yeah, good for you. You only live once, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what was your approach? Like, what's your general philosophy about how people should improve at chess?
Well, normally, I, as I told you, I try not to focus so much in openings. I mean, why to teach some kid, some 11 years boy, 37 moves in the night, or if he's going to blunder one whole night in the middle game? So,
right.
Yeah, so normally I try to focus on the middle games, on end games as well, but on chess in general, yeah? I try to analyze all the students' game, explaining the reasons of his mistakes, etc., but I barely focus in openings, you know?
That's become a theme on this podcast for sure. I think, they're so tempting. There's something about them all having names, you know, and there's sort of the illusion that by memorizing the 14 moves, that's going to dictate the game, but it rarely works out that way until, I don't know. At what level would you say that openings become super important?
Well, super important, I mean, above 2400 or something, or 2500 even. I would say that every opening is playable, actually, in my level even, yeah? So why not to play the Benoni, for example? I understand that Fabiano Caruana doesn't want to play the Benoni or the Benko Gambit, but in our levels, 2500 or something like this, I think everything is playable. Yeah, and yeah, one thing, I also had a lot of fights. Let's say fights with a lot of parents. Yeah, a lot of parents want their kids to learn the knight of the Berlin until the 50th move, and then I had to tell them, okay, well, your kid is 8 years old, so let's just try first to know what is a bishop pair or what is a wheat square or something like this. Yeah?
Right. Yeah. People want shortcuts, but you have to teach them how to think.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what were formative things, Pepe, for you in your chess development? Like, were there any books that really impacted your trajectory? Like, any recommendations for people?
Yeah. So for example, I used to enjoy a lot Mark Dorefsky's books, of course. This book that, I don't know the name in English, but probably it's like a thing that you have an opponent in front of you or something like this. Don't forget you have an opponent or something like this in front of you. So it talks about prophylaxis. It talks about many methods, which are extremely interesting. So I used to enjoy these books a lot. And then I also liked very much Chess for Zebras from Jonathan Rosen.
Yeah, he's a great author.
Yeah, and The Seven Sins in Chess.
Yes, yeah, big fan of that one too.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first books I read, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a fun read, and it's it's very filled with practical advice.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. And so you've mentioned you don't think openings are as important. So what about tactics? Like, let's say you have like a 2,000 feet A level player. Like, how much time should they be spending on tactics versus other aspects of the game?
Yeah, I think tactics is one of the most important aspects of the game. So, I mean, whenever I used to teach, then some part of the class was just for tactics, yeah? So now we're using to teach all these people in Chess24, in our Spanish broadcast, even in English, this force method, yeah? We talk a lot about these threats, captures, and checks. And then using this stupid method, you can actually solve many, many, many chess puzzles.
Yeah, it's definitely a very good shortcut. I watched one of your tactics training videos, and I'm always, like, when I do tactics, and I'm about, like, 2170 FIDE, so I'm in my head, I now have ingrained check captures and attacks, but what I've noticed is stronger players often, if I watch one of their videos, they just see a move that didn't occur to me faster.
Players don't think about these shortcuts, they just see it, yeah?
Yeah.
So I was doing one of these tactic trainer show with Leinier Dominguez.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, one of the world top players. And then it was amazing. I mean, he didn't have to think even for 2 seconds, yeah?
Yeah, those guys are so incredible. So did you notice, like, did he calculate faster than you too? Or was it just that he found, like, he'd seen more patterns? Would you say it was more a matter of calculation or memorization or both equally?
I don't know. I think these guys have studied so many games and positions that, of course, they recognize many, many more patterns than a pattern like me can do. Yeah, but I don't know, because it's just so fast. It's just so fast that puzzles that I had to spend like 1 minute, he could see them in 1 second. So, yeah, there's a huge difference between a 2700 and a 2500.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way watching your tactics. So, you know, everyone except for like Magnus, you know, has someone who makes them feel that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So who are the strongest players that you've played, Jose?
Well, I played against Giri, Hari Krishna, Ponomariov, Ivanchuk, Madlakov, for example.
Wow. So. Yeah. So those guys are obviously monsters. What is do you have like a most memorable experience like of between playing them, whether it was a good result or a case where like you were humbled and just like mind blown a little bit by how strong they were?
Well, I managed to make a draw against Ivanchuk, but that was a semi rapid game, so it doesn't count actually.
I'd count it.
Yeah. And then I managed to beat Wojciechek once, this Polish, I don't know if it's the correct pronunciation, Wojciechek or Wojciechek.
Yeah, I know who you mean, W-O-J, but I don't know how to pronounce it either.
But then most of them, of course, crushed me. Yeah, Giri crushed me, Ponomariov. I managed to give some fight, though, but, you know, at the end, most of these results, of course, are... I signed under the zero, yeah? So,
yeah. And is Dominguez, would you say he's the strongest player you've had a chance to analyze with?
Which one?
Dominguez, or was it one of the players you played that you mentioned?
Yeah, Giri, for example. Giri.
Did you get a chance to look at the game with him?
Yeah, of course. No, whenever I play against anybody, I would love to analyze the game after finishing. Yes, and I think for kids, for example, if they play against a grandmaster, I think it's a good opportunity for them to learn. So that's why I always offer myself in order to analyze the game. And if I play against one of these monsters, of course, I want to hear their thoughts. And it's actually amazing how much they can see. So you, compared to you, yeah.
So you tackle them on the way out the door, and whether they want to look at the game or not, they're going to look at it with
no,
you.
No, before they stand up, you know, so they cannot run. You know?
Okay, nice. And they've been nice enough to.
Most of them have been nice. Yeah.
Okay, nice. So when you think back on your playing career, is there like what were the highlights? Was it getting the Grandmaster title or like a youth title? Or do you have like a standout memory?
Well, I managed to I mean, these small titles, yeah, for me. But I managed to be Spanish under 18 champion, for example. And then, I got my IM title with 17 or 18 years old. And, of course, the Grandmaster title is one of the biggest achievements. And, yes, I managed to win Strong Open in Spain with I was ranked, like, number 25 or something. So there were, like, 26 grandmasters or something like this, and so basically this would be
nice. Do you get nervous before games?
Yes, of course I get really nervous, and I think this happens to everybody. When I'm beating a stronger player, I start getting nervous, and then I cannot even think, you know. So
yeah,
I think of course, with experience, this is improving a little bit, but still happens to me. And you feel that tension, that energy, and, you know.
Do you feel an increased amount when you play someone like Giri?
An increase of what, sorry?
So do you feel, like, increased tension if you're playing someone, like, amongst the strongest players you've played?
Of course, and I go to those games much more motivated, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it must be an amazing experience.
You barely have opportunities to play these guys, but for example in the leagues, in the Spanish league, which is quite strong, I had these chances to play these guys in the Bundesliga, for example, as well. And in the leagues you have these chances to play against these monsters.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so Pepe, now it's time to get to the important topics.
Okay.
Facundo the F-pawn. So I've had Simon Williams on the show. He's made Harry the H pawn famous, but I hadn't met Facundo till I watched your videos. So what's the story? How did Facundo come into this world?
I don't know. I was just doing. What we try to do is to do this broadcast natural. Yeah, so we don't plan anything. You see our broadcast. It's nothing serious. So basically, it's like we are with our friends in a bar. Yeah. So we say whatever comes to our mind. And when I said Facundo the F1, and then everybody liked it. So Facundo remained over there. I say a lot of stupid things, and some of them remain, and some of them just people right. just don't. You know, so.
That's funny. Have you named any other chess pieces or pawns?
Yeah, we got Carlitos, the C pawn.
Nice.
And Aristoteles, the A-pawn. But
I like it.
Yeah, the rest have not been baptized yet. Yeah,
nice. But and when you stream in Spanish, your native language versus English, do you feel like there's a difference in your presentation? I don't speak Spanish, so I wasn't able to check those out.
Yeah, of course. I mean, for me, it's much more natural. So, I mean, some jokes that I'm able to say in Spanish, I cannot even say in English. Yeah. Yes, but I mean, I try to do the same thing more or less. Yeah. So whenever there's time trouble, so we bring the excitement, and but we don't we try not to lose the proper analysis of chess. So we try to make the broadcast the streaming fun, but at the same time we try to analyze deeply all the variations. So because people want this as well. Yeah.
Yeah, people want a mix of entertainment and improvement.
Yes, yes. So it has to be a mixture, yeah? So you cannot be like a clown for 3 hours and then not without explaining anything. It has to be a combination of both things, yeah? So people can be entertained, and then the kids like the streamings, and then the people who want to improve their chess can improve their chess,
yeah? Yeah, it must be. I think it's probably a little bit better streaming than what I do, because when I teach classrooms, what I've noticed is if you try to throw jokes in, and maybe this is just something I need to work on, but if you have a joke that actually makes them laugh, it increases their energy level, and then they get a little harder to manage, because then they all want to crack jokes, you know? So it's hard in that setting to find the right balance between, okay, I want to be entertaining, but I don't want this just to go off the rails either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but teaching kids, I mean, in real life, is a bit different. Yeah, of course, when I'm teaching some student, I'm not doing this ratata thing. Or normally, I get a little bit more serious. But since we are streaming 7 hours of chess, where normally they don't move, for example, in 30 minutes, you have to talk about everything, not only chess. You have to talk about your life. So I don't know about different stuff. Normally we try to compare these chess streamings with NBA streamings, for example, because they stop the game a lot in NBA. And the commentators, for example, there were some Spanish commentators who I used to watch them a lot. And then they spoke about different things, you know, and that's what people like, not only about basketball or chess, but you know, different things.
Yeah, our buddy Gusti is the master of that.
Yeah, Gusti is...
tries to avoid talking about chess at all costs, but sometimes he can't avoid it.
Yeah.
So you're an NBA fan?
Yeah, I actually follow NBA, football, tennis, and basically, yeah, I would say these three sports, and also some cyclism. Yeah.
Nice. I've noticed a lot of chess players are tennis fans.
Yes. You know, in Spain, since we got Nadal, it was a revolution. So everybody started to follow tennis, to play tennis. A lot of tennis courts were built. So.
Yeah, he's an incredible player, and he seems like a good guy, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Pepe, we've got the candidates coming up in a couple months. How tuned in are you to events like that? You know, right now we have Weekend Z going. Like, do you follow those events pretty closely?
Yeah, and actually I'm doing commentary on the Vacancy tournament in Spanish in Chess 24. So yesterday I was working, and today is the rest day. That's why I told you this date.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. So, I know you've been super busy, so I appreciate it. So what's your take on Weekend Z so far?
Well, Giri has been playing extremely aggressive, which is could be big news, actually. And yesterday there was a really interesting game between Carlsen and Giri, for example, a crazy game in the French. And Anand is playing well as well. Carlsen is just half point behind, so let's see what happens. But I would say that Giri is playing quite well. Magnus didn't manage to create troubles with the white pieces, so I don't know what's going on with Magnus. Let's see what happens. There's still a lot of rounds to go. And if you ask me about the candidates, yeah, well, Aronian is my big candidate. Yeah, he's been showing a lot of strength in the last year, especially. So, but you know, everything can happen. It's just one tournament. All of them are extremely strong. So everything could happen. Even Kajakin, who is the lowest rated player, he has shown very good skills when he's got time to prepare these kind of events. He's got great preparation, a great team, and he's able to do everything.
Yeah, it seems like literally anyone could win the tournament, and it'll probably be pretty narrowly condensed, like the winning score versus even the lowest score. Yeah, it's interesting about Giri. I feel like he gets a bit of a bad rap. I mean, I know some of the draw stuff it's become a joke, although at this point, to me, it's like a tired joke at this point. Like, you know, it's enough already. His games are attacking. Like, he's an elite player. He's not drawing when he plays people 150 points lower rated than him. It's just when he plays the other top players. Like, sometimes your games end in draws. We're blessed that so many elite players are pretty likable right now. So it's hard to just pick someone to root for. But it would be nice for him to grab a big paycheck and trophy and take a title right here.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 2,800 for a reason, yeah? So he didn't make it to 2,800 making draws all the time as people are making fun of, yeah? So I mean, he's, of course, a really strong player and all my respect, yeah?
Yeah, and he's young. I mean, he's good enough where, like, anything's possible. You know, it's normal to have consolidation periods in the advancement of one's chess career.
Exactly. So everybody's rooting for the young people, but we cannot forget Anand and Kratnik, yeah? So whenever we want to bury them, they just, again, make another super tournament. And then, for example, Kramnik is playing super well, and Bishi Anand has just become the Rapid World Champion with 48 years, so...
Yeah, it's really inspiring. I know you mentioned that, like, you feel like your chances for advancement are decreasing a little bit at 30, but guys like that with Peter Svidler winning the Russian championship again, like they provide a lot of inspiration for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So I noticed, Jose, that you did you did some videos on AlphaZero.
Yes.
Although I think a couple were in Spanish. So overall, what was your impression of this new boss of ours?
Well, I talk a lot about this with one of my closest friends. He's working in artificial intelligence. He is doing PhD in Rome, and he's working in a very close field. And yes, so of course it's amazing what AlphaZero has done. I mean, the games that they have shown us. But I try to look this from the scientific point of view as well. And normally, as a scientist, you want to be able to reproduce the results of somebody else, yeah? And this is something that Google hasn't shown, yeah? So they have just shown us 10 games, for example, 10 victories. But I would love to see the code, for example, and the rest of the games to see where AlphaZero fails, yeah? Normally, when one is publishing a paper about a new method of something, normally you also try to explain the weaknesses of your program. But I think Google and DeepMind are they prefer. I mean, they have gained a lot with the marketing already, and it's not that clear that they're going to show everything, the code and all those games. But of course, the games are impressive. You look at those games about the Queen's Indian, for example, nobody understands how these lines, yeah? And if a human tried to place like this, AlphaZero will just collapse, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And it's a tricky issue because Google is a for-profit company. So if this were an academic endeavor, we could totally understand, like, okay, you should show the code, you need peer approval,
yeah,
like you say, stuff like that. But who knows what applications they have in mind, and they might not want people like building off of what they've designed, or at least they want to do it on their own timeline.
Yeah, exactly. So some people were saying that this could even apply to some other fields, for example, in medicine or etc. But the thing is, these kind of programs are programmed to solve specific tasks, for example. And yes, AlphaZero is extremely great in playing chess, but only playing chess. Yeah? So let's see what kind of applications they try to look for.
Yeah, and in terms of openings, so you mentioned that like there are moves that they don't even understand. Do you think that something like this will have a big impact on openings at the top level?
Well, could be, but the thing is, if we cannot, if they are not going to publish any version that we can use, it's going to be difficult. Yeah, but of course, I don't know. I don't know how top grandmasters work, but of course, in tournaments, we are trying to have any slight advantage that we can get. We go for that, yeah? And so let's see. I actually don't have a clue.
Yeah, it's hard to say, and who knows? Like, we don't know what Google has in mind either,
yeah,
for the program. Yeah. So who knows how much exposure we'll get? Like, will it play in the computer championship in a proper setting? That would be amazing because there'd be a lot of games then.
Yeah, for example, one of the complaints from Stockpiece people was like, yeah, so 1 minute was given to every computer to make a move. And one of the designers of Stockfish, he was saying that Stockfish was a program designed to choose in which part of the game to spend more time, you know. So, and it was running a different computer with a different processor. So, I mean, a lot of things have to be clarified. So, of course, it's a big achievement, but we need to be, patient and you know, wait to see more things. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. So, Jose, what's your schedule look like in the near future? Do you have any tournaments coming up?
Yes, I will be playing this Sunday in the Bundesliga in Germany.
Do you know who you play?
Sorry?
Do you know who you play?
Well, not yet. I didn't even check the list, so I should do that. And later I'm traveling to Gibraltar to play one of the strongest open in the world.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a tournament I would love to go to.
Yeah, which is actually just 3 hours by car from my city. So.
Oh, jealous of you Europeans.
Yeah, so I can visit my family and then head to Gibraltar. It's cool.
Nice. Have you played there before?
Last year I went there, and it was an extremely great experience. So to see all those players playing the same tournament as you, I mean, and I managed to play Matt Lago, for example. He beat me, but anyway, I like this kind of experiences. Yeah.
Yeah, and do you get to do much socializing when you're at a tournament like that, or is it pretty much just all business with the players?
No, of course. And as I'm telling you, also Gibraltar is just close to Andalusia, my region. So I have got a lot of friends over there in Cadiz, for example, which is the Spanish closest city. And yes, the final day, for example, there is a dinner in which all the players go, and then there is some small party, and then you have time to socialize and then to meet everybody. It's quite nice.
It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I wish you luck in Gibraltar, Jose. One more question. So out of all the tournaments you've been to, we've got listeners of all levels of chess, but I know some of them are, you know, like to hit the road and try to travel to tournaments. So do you have like one tournament that's your favorite, or is it too hard to pick?
Well, as I told you, I enjoy a lot going to Cuba, for example. So the Capablanca.
Yeah, that's right. You already said that in your defense,
yeah,
although...
But I also have another choice for the people. So if you would like to come to Spain, I recommend you the Benasque Open. It's in the mountains in summer, so the weather is very nice. There is a football tournament, there is a ping pong or table tennis tournament, and there are many, many parallel activities, and it's a tournament that I enjoy a lot as well.
Sounds great. Can you say the name of it again?
Benasque.
Okay, awesome.
Nasque.
Okay, that sounds awesome. And like I said, I mean, people want to go to Spain anyway. So,
Well done.
Cool. Okay, well, Jose, unless you have anything else to cover, I do want to ask how people can contact you. Is there a preferred social media method, or should they just look for you on Chess24? What's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, they can contact me in Facebook. I'm Pepe Cuenca Jimenez in Facebook, or Twitter. Or Instagram. I think I got Instagram as well. I never use it, but I think I got it.
Yeah, I haven't.
My Chess24 email is working as well. So pepe.chess24.com.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much, Pepe. I know you've got a ton to do. I mean, you've been super busy with Weekend Z, and you've got your streaming too. So I'll let you get to it. I really appreciate you taking the time and introducing yourself to our listeners a bit.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's been really a pleasure to be in your podcast. And yes, thanks again.
Special shout out to my PayPal and Perpetual partners. I spend about 5 hours a week working on the show, and while I love doing it, it can be hard to find the time. Without these people, the show would not be possible. So, special thanks to Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Chris Wainscott, Coach Jay's Chess Academy, Chris Flanagan, Gary Andrews, I am Greg Shahadi, Jason Dunbar, Jennifer Valens, John Fernandez, WGM Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Johnny McMenamin, Kelly Palmer, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Macaulay Peterson, Matthew Tedesco, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Paul Sweeney, Peter Lux, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek, WGM Tatya Vabrahamian, Tim Seymour, Todd Bryant, Victor Vrankulj, FM Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, guys. I will catch you next week.
Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power,
loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.